Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. Well, there are many ways that people listen to Eyes on Success and programs like it. People may listen through a number of internet streaming services to which we provide the program. People may listen via podcast and get the shows automatically. They may download shows from the website directly, or they can listen through radio reading services. And today, we're going to talk about one of those radio reading services so you'll know a little bit more about what goes on in one and what they're all about.
The Talking Information Center is a radio reading service in Massachusetts that provides content across the state and also via other services across the country. We'll be talking with Ron Bersani, the executive director since its inception in 1978, about the history and future of radio reading services in general and the Talking Information Center in specific. Before we get started, we have an announcement to make. In January, in show 1402, we talked about a journal of disability-related prose and poetry called Word Gathering. This is issued quarterly online, so everybody can get it. Every issue includes an interview, and the spring issue, which was just released, includes an interview of us. And we encourage you to go there and read it.
And we'll have a link to that in our show notes if you'd like to learn a little bit more about us, the radio show, and what other kinds of things we do when we're not being radio hosts.
Getting on with the main show, let's turn to our tip of the week. This week's tip is, even if you cannot read newspapers or magazines in print on paper, you can still access this material using a computer, a tablet, a smartphone, or another portable device. You should pick the device that's right for you.
So as Nancy said, there are many ways of getting this material. I mean, you may download your material onto an MP3 player or something like a Bookport. You can subscribe to podcasts on such devices. You may read newspapers and magazines on your computer these days. And whether your computer has some magnification software built in or a screen reader, that may be your way of accessing that material. There are lots of options, and you need to just decide which one is best for you. And you may want to use various methods depending on where you are and when you're trying to acquire such material.
Let's start by meeting Ron Bersani and learning a bit about what radio reading services are.
My name is Ron Bersani, and I'm the executive director of Talking Information Center, a radio reading service located in Massachusetts in a small town called Marshfield on the south shore of Massachusetts.
Now, you've been involved in radio reading services and the Talking Information Center for a very long time, as I understand it. Can you talk a little bit about how this got started and how you got involved in the program?
Sure. We've actually been operating since June 19th, 1978, so we're coming up on 36 years in radio reading. I got involved. I was an English teacher at Marshfield High School, and I heard about a new radio station coming to town and read in the paper that the owner of the radio station wanted to start something I had never heard of before called a radio reading service for the blind. And I was doing some sports reports, actually, for the radio station. I was the color commentary for high school basketball. So I went to the owner and said, I just think what you plan to do is a wonderful thing, and I'd like to volunteer to read for a couple of hours a week. And he said, well, actually, we don't have anybody who has the time to actually get the program going. So since you expressed an interest, it's all yours. See what you can do with it. So that's how I got involved and began looking at trying to find out as much as I could about what a radio reading service was, what it did, and then started to try to get some volunteers together. And we started on June 19th. We had one tiny little studio that the radio station gave us. We had all old borrowed equipment from the radio station, and we went on the air for about 4 hours a day, Monday through Friday, and that was the beginning. We had 10 listeners.
You mentioned that TIC is a radio reading service, and many of our listeners listen to Eyes on Success over various radio reading services around the U.S. and Canada. But for those who don't, can you explain what a radio reading service is?
It is an information service that provides current print material, primarily, in a variety of ways for people who are totally blind, legally blind, or print disabled, and that could include people who can't hold a publication or turn the pages. And what we do is we have, here in Marshfield, we have about 200 volunteer readers who come into our studios, and we read newspapers, we read books, we read magazines, supermarket ads, department store ads. We have call-in programs specifically designed for topics of interest for the blind. We cover events in the community. We attend the state conventions of NFB and ACB and broadcast live from those events. So it's a service specifically designed to serve the needs of people who are blind or print disabled.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, 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 success.
This week's focus topic is the Talking Information Center radio reading service.
Now, I guess the other thing that's special about these services is that they're not available to everybody. You often transmit your information. People need special receivers to get these programs, right? And that's because of the copyright issues?
Well, there are several different manners that are used to transmit the programs. The way that they started primarily was on a closed-circuit radio signal called an SCA, or subcarrier authorization signal. And, you know, people are not familiar with the term, but everybody has probably heard an SCA broadcast at one point or another in their life. It used to be used for something called Muzak, which is the background music that you hear in supermarkets and shopping malls and elevators. And in 1969, a blind man sitting in his doctor's office listening to Muzak decided that this might be an ideal way to transmit information to the blind because we could avoid copyright laws by transmitting a one-to-one communication. And that's how the first radio reading service developed out in Minnesota in 1969.
What was his name?
Stan Potter.
Well, thank you, Stan Potter.
Absolutely. He got the ball rolling. That was the first service that started in Minnesota at the University of Minnesota and gradually began to catch on as more and more blind people across the country found out what an incredible service it was. It was really the only way that the information was transmitted in those days, and gradually things have changed. With the advent of cable TV in the late 70s and 80s, that became another vehicle for transmitting the information, as we were able to get some cable carriers to donate the use of an audio channel, and most of the time it would be an alphanumeric channel, where you would have on the screen, there would be scrolling information like the cable schedule for the day or maybe the school lunch schedule or something. And then on the audio portion of that would be a radio reading service, in our case, a Talking Information Center. That was the second way services began to be transmitted.
And again, not anybody could subscribe, I presume. You had to be certified print disabled or visually impaired.
Right, exactly. So that was the second way. And then with the advent of the Internet, it opened up another whole line of available ways to distribute the programming. And so we began streaming our audio on the Internet. And then in the 1990s, the FCC and Congress really, in the communication bill that was passed in the mid-90s, they took special look at radio reading services and really were able to help us by determining that information produced for the blind would be exempt from copyright laws. So there are very few things that we cannot read without running afoul of the copyright laws.
And that made a big difference to printed material that was available in alternate formats to the visually impaired and print disabled, right?
Absolutely. It's a huge, huge step in the right direction. And here we are, you know, for us going on 36 years later, we have subcarrier signals throughout the state. We have 16 radio stations that take part in our programming, but we also have 8 audio streams. We stream 8 different streams on the Internet. So people, we have six affiliates located throughout the state, and people are able to listen to any one of the affiliates online. We also have a national stream that is available online off of our website. So we also right now own an open channel FM radio station in a local community. So there are lots of different ways now that people are able to access our programming.
And where do you get all the material? That's a huge amount of material.
Well, we get an awful lot of it off the internet. For instance, we read a lot of publications that are not available to us on the local newsstand. We can't get a copy of the Washington Times, for instance. So that's something we download off the internet. And that is something that we have a couple of staff people who spend a lot of time up on the internet downloading articles that we will then read as part of our program for that day.
And you still have a fleet of volunteers come in and do the actual reading, or do you have staff people for that?
It's primarily done by volunteers. For instance, I'm on the air for a half an hour Monday through Friday, and that's it. And that's just a starter program in the morning. Most of our programming, specifically all of our newspapers, books, and magazines, that is all done by volunteer readers. We have seven different recording areas inside of our facility, and the volunteers can sign up and come in. And if you're reading, for instance, the New York Times, that might go on at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So you know you've got all morning to get in there and get it recorded.
So you said you have hundreds of volunteers.
We have 200 in our facility here in Marshfield, but we do have affiliates located throughout the state. And totally, throughout the state, we have over 600 volunteers who take part in the program. And for instance, when we're reading the Boston Globe, because we're close enough to Boston that we would be reading that, we have an affiliate on Cape Cod that's reading the Cape Cod Times. We have an affiliate in Springfield, Mass. That's reading the Springfield Reporter. And out in the Berkshires, which is in the far western part of the state, out in Pittsfield, we have an affiliate out there that's reading the Berkshire Eagle. So each affiliate location gets their local news, their local supermarket ads, calendars of events. You know, we try to make it as local as possible.
And how much staff does it take to manage all this operation and all these volunteers?
Well, we have 10 staff here in Marshfield. We have 5 full-time and 5 part-time people. And each one of our affiliates, they're smaller, works exactly like a network. They break away from our general interest and statewide and national interest programming to do their local programs and then rejoin us when it's time to go back to national stuff. And it varies from affiliate to affiliate. The average is 2 staff people at each affiliate.
So I actually started as a volunteer reader through our local radio reading service, which is WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. And I remember when I, you know, volunteered and they said, well, that's very nice. You seem to have a nice voice. Now we need to audition you. I went through a fairly extensive audition process, and then the program director listened to the tape that I had made and fortunately accepted me into the program, but I actually know people who've been rejected. Do you also do the same thing?
We do the same thing. We have an extensive audition process that includes a vocabulary list, a reading from some nonfiction material, a short story, sports article, and then something out of a newspaper, so that we can get a pretty good feel of whether they are able to enunciate properly and have a good enough vocabulary that they're not going to get tripped up with words, and try to find out, okay, so-and-so is not so good on sports. Maybe we better not have him or her read sports. We'll find something else for them.
Oh, I can definitely resonate with that because I inadvertently signed up to read the sports section one day. I was just a substitute because I didn't have a regular slot. And I discovered that there were all of these phrases that I didn't know, and I didn't know how to phrase them. You know, I didn't know where to put the emphasis in the sentence because if you're not familiar with what the terms are, you just don't know how to say it right.
You can't fake it, that's for sure. And it's kind of like reading financial information. If you really don't know what you're talking about, it comes across. So, you know, we do try to match people up.
Oh, so you do everything pre-recorded. You don't air it live?
Some programs are aired live, yes. It depends. For instance, we do a live program at 7:30 in the morning, and it's kind of an eye-opener type program where we'll give a commuter update to let people who might be trying to get to work know if there's a problem with the MBTA, the mass transit system here in Boston, let them know if there are elevators or escalators out of service or if the trains are not running on time. We do things like read the daily headlines in the Boston Globe, Boston Herald, and Wall Street Journal. We do a weather report that is actually done by our blind weatherman, and we do the lottery numbers and the daily horoscope and the advice column, do some weekend outlook where we let people know what's taking place in the community on the weekend, and that leads right into a live reading, always live at 8 o'clock of the Wall Street Journal. Then we have a live reading of the Boston Globe at 9 and a live reading of the Boston Herald at 10. After that, primarily, it's all stuff pre-recorded by volunteers who get in at any time of the day.
It sounds like you actually produce a lot of your own material. I assume you make that available to other radio reading services also?
We do. Every single one of our programs is archived on our website. We have a website. We have an archive section there. And we have 6 weeks of every single program that we do is archived up there. And it's also made available not only for downloading, but also downloaded as a podcast. So anybody can go to our website. They can, if they're interested in hearing the Wall Street Journal, but they can't hear it at 8 o'clock in the morning, they can set it up as a podcast and have it delivered to their iPhone or whatever device they're using at whatever time is convenient to them. So all programs are available. We have over 20 radio reading services in over 20 states that carry either multiple hours of our programming on a live basis or go up and grab programs off our archive site.
Oh, that's great that you have those available on your archive site and as podcasts. I remember many years ago, well, we're retired now, but back when I was working, I had one of these special radio receivers for listening to radio reading services material. And, you know, if you missed a program, that was it. And these days, it's very nice to be able to time shift your listening, which I do with most of my listening these days, and people do with TV, radio, and all kinds of material.
The technological changes that I have seen in the last 35 years are staggering. You know, and I can think back to 35 years ago when there really wasn't any cable TV, there wasn't any internet. The changes are just astronomical. And the opportunities for blind folks now to be able to have it their way, get their information when they want their information, and the depth and breadth of the information that's available is just phenomenal today.
Now, in addition to producing a large amount of your own material, you also pull material from other places, for instance, Eyes on Success, and I assume there's other agencies and organizations that you pull material from. Can you talk a little about that?
Absolutely. We have a regular broadcast schedule, and if we need a program when one of our volunteers can't quite make it in, we can go up to the international site of Radio Reading Services. We have a cooperative venture where the services will put programs up on an archive site, and we can go up there and grab someone else's Sports Illustrated or Economics, or, you know, we can grab a program that we need and make that available to our listeners. So it's a wonderful sharing opportunity and something that has really grown over time. It used to be a tape exchange, actually.
You mean people sent cartridges or reels back and forth?
Absolutely. Years ago, it was either reel-to-reels or cassettes, believe it or not, and neither one of which is used by anybody today.
Wow. So that must have taken days to get the material from one service to another, but now you're doing it all digitally. How long does it take before, let's say, you've recorded a show from 10 to 11 in the morning on a Monday? When is that available for people to download and listen to after the fact?
Almost immediately. It immediately goes up to the website automatically. We pay for a system that takes that program, converts it to an MP3, sends it up to the archive site, and it's available immediately. It used to be that it would take days, as you mentioned. When Descriptive Video Service first started at Channel 2, it was actually started at the Boston affiliate of public television. And they used to do the DVS programs, but it wasn't distributed nationally. And we actually used to have 14 reel-to-reel machines. And at 9 o'clock on a Sunday night, one of our staff members would come in And when Masterpiece Theater started at 9 o'clock, we would start those 14 reel-to-reel machines, and we would record the DVS broadcast of that program, put it in boxes, and ship it out to reading services all over the country.
Wow.
Wow. Things have certainly changed, haven't they?
Things have really changed.
So you must have a pretty wide listenership to many of your programs. What kind of listenership do you think you have?
Well, it's hard to think what we have nationally because, as I say, our program is carried by radio reading services in over 20 states. So I don't know the number of listeners in each one of those states that may be tuned into a particular program. So that boosts the listenership immensely. We estimate that in Massachusetts we have over 20,000 listeners.
Wow, wow, that's quite a bit.
It is a lot, and it's a lot of responsibility to make sure that we're delivering what people want, and that's one of the challenges, to keep in touch with the listener. And we always say that this is not our radio station. It's not our radio reading service. It's the listener's reading service, and whatever they want, we're going to try our best to make it happen.
You also, at noon, do a specialty program, and at least on Mondays, it's an interview show, and we'll be on that show on Monday, March 31st. Can you talk more in general about what these noontime shows are?
Well, the program you're going to be on is called Mission Possible, and it was created by our development director, actually, along with our production assistant. And it's a program that wants to focus on happenings in the community, successful people in the community, services that are available in the community, programs like yours to let people know what it is like and to let them know, to make sure that they know when your program airs, and so they'll be able to tune in. So it's interview format. We like to have people on as live guests. I think they've had some people who have been involved with the ski program for the blind that takes place in Maine. We try to get people from the community that are talking about innovative things and things that you might not necessarily think a blind person could do. So it's a terrific program, and they've got interviews scheduled out for the next couple of months.
Sounds familiar.
We can resonate with that. So I was wondering, we talked a little bit before about all the changes that have happened, primarily in the transmission and reception of these services. And I wonder what the upcoming challenges are for radio reading services. I mean, there's a lot more material available over the internet, via computer, to the visually impaired these days that just wasn't available when these services started. I'm wondering how that impacts your mission and your outlook for the future.
It has a huge impact, and it certainly has shaped what we're trying to do for the future. And one of the things that has developed out of that is we're trying to become more interactive and information-driven, not as much in the sense of reading the day's newspapers, but trying to develop more programs, like some of the podcasts that we're now utilizing, that are of specific interest and that are of and by and for visually impaired people. And in addition, programs like the Mission Possible, where we are focusing on bringing people in and interviewing them and talking about current important things. Because I think newspapers are available now. I mean, there are a wide range of ways to be able to get the daily newspaper. Even if it is in a non-human voice, those voices are getting pretty good. And so that kind of information is available. And when we decided to make our programs available for podcasts, it's because blind young people are no different than sighted young people. They want their information when they want it, and they want it delivered to them in whatever their device of choice is, whether it's an iPhone, whether it's an iPad. They've got the same kind of devices that everybody else has, and they want the information to be delivered into that device. So I think radio reading service will gradually shift away from the SCA-driven model and will be more internet-driven and device-driven over the course of the next 5 to 10, 15 years.
And for those of you who are listening to Eyes on Success through one of the services of the Talking Information Center, we send you a big hello from Nancy and me.
And if you're not listening to Eyes on Success through the Talking Information Center and you'd like to listen to it, it's broadcast Mondays at 5:30 in the afternoon and Saturdays, first thing, 12:01 a.m. Eastern Time.
That's for the early birds.
Now for this week's final topic, how you can find and listen to Talking Information Center shows and or your local radio reading service. For people who want to get the Talking Information Center's information on some web-based device, can you give the URL that they can go to?
The first thing they should do is check out our website. If they go to our website, which is ticnetwork.org, every single one of our streams is available at that website. So if you want to listen to our Cape Cod affiliate, you can do so. The Marshfield affiliate, you can do so. Any one of our streams, including the national stream. We have a separate programming that we provide for reading services across the country that basically eliminates our local newspapers and local supermarket ads and concentrates on material that would be of national interest. So that would be the place to go. Each one of our websites has a different URL, so that would make it difficult to give all of them. But go to the website, and everything is available there.
So you talked about your website where people can go to find streams and shows of national interest as well as local interest to the Massachusetts area. If people around the country in their own local areas wanted to find some more local information on such services, where would you send them?
I would send them to the IAAIS website, because when they go to that website, they should be able to get a list of radio reading services that are available throughout the country. So that is IAAIS.org, and if they go there, they'll get a host of information about radio reading services.
And actually, as the International Association of Audio Information Services, they have a number of services that are not in the U.S. They've got some in Canada and New Zealand and various other countries. Can people reach you by phone?
We have a nationwide toll-free number, and we'd be happy to have them call us on that number. It's 800-696-9505. And we'll be happy to answer any other questions that we haven't gotten to today.
As usual, we'll have links to any of the contact information that you've heard on the show in our show notes associated with this show. Just go to www.eyesonsuccess.net.
That's it for show number 1412. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about GW Micro's new program, Socialize. We'll talk with Steve Clower from GW Micro, the folks who brought you Window Eyes and GW Connect. GW Socialize enhances the Facebook user experience for people who use magnifiers and screen readers. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-258-0333, and we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman Torpy and Peter Torpy, and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. For detailed information or a full archive of programs, visit www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also follow us on Facebook and Audioboo at Eyes on Success and on Twitter at @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success, and have a nice day.